Hello and welcome to the TechStrong AI podcast. I'm Amanda Rosani, and I'm excited to be here with Mike Fizard and our special guest, Cindy Housen. She is the Chief Data Strategy Officer for ThoughtSpot. How are y'all doing today?
I'm great, Amanda. Nice to be here.
I'm doing great. It's always good to be here.
Wonderful. Well, first off, can you share a little bit about ThoughtSpot? What are the services that ThoughtSpot provides? And then we can go into our topic of the day.
Yes, ThoughtSpot is the AI-powered analytics platform. We are the modern experience layer on all your data.
Wonderful. So that being said, we're here today to discuss the dangers of data bias. You've done a lot of research in this area, I believe. And we're going to start talking about also the importance of women in building a more inclusive AI models. So what, from your experience, have you found in this area to be a key concern?
So Amanda, Mike, I've been working in this space for more than 30 years, have always been a minority in tech. And as we look at how AI is becoming infused in our daily lives, in all our work processes, the risk of bias at scale, and we don't even notice it, is even more important. Unfortunately, we have not made a lot of progress in improving the diversity in STEM overall, but particularly in data and analytics. And as I just look at the most recent jobs reports, so February 2024, only 26% of the data and, let's say, mathematics, the data science workforce is women. It's been flat for 20 years.
So where does the bias exist? And I'm asking the question because is it in the data that we're using to train the AI models, or is it in the processes that we're using to create the AI models? Because the folks who are building the AI models are data scientists who are predominantly folks that look a lot like me.
Yes, both, Mike, both. And so, and we kind of think because it's a machine that machines are maybe less biased than people. And this is an issue that affects not only women, but any minority, whether it's by ethnicity or, geographically, what have you. And so we have to start with the assumption that all data is biased, how we collect data. So if it's digital interactions, we might have poor diversity also by age. Maybe seniors are not using as much of the digital devices. Or then if we look at geographically, there are certain world economies that are less digitally savvy. So all data is biased. And then the people working on building these algorithms, if they are not having diversity of thought, they may not know what to look for. And so they may not even notice biases in the training data. They're not noticing biases in the output from these AI algorithms. And it just perpetuates a larger problem.
So my first question, I have two, but my first one is, so what do we do about the data that's already there, that already has these problems? How do we reverse those issues moving forward or repair those issues moving forward?
Yeah, so Amanda, recognizing that there is a problem is the most important first step. The second thing then is there's a number of mitigation strategies for biased data. And that might mean that there are certain things that are a proxy for race, ethnicity, gender, age, where you would have a flag and a warning. What are the attributes? How do you de-emphasize certain attributes or features in the data selection? The other thing is really then possibly using synthetic data to compensate for the biases in the training data.
How much synthetic data is there and how hard is it to create all that? Because it seems like it's a good approach, but does it also reflect reality? Because then we're using something that is theoretical?
Yeah, I don't think it's just theoretical. I think it's become more practical in recent years. I think generative AI makes it increasingly possible to create this synthetic data. There's other things that we can do as a matter of process, having things like review boards and improving the diversity of the workforce itself. But those are a little more slow moving, I would say. But we can't just leave it to happenstance. If you look at the way we do credit approvals, job applications, approvals of welfare recipients, even increasingly it's automated by AI. And so we have to recognize the risks of not addressing these biases in the algorithms and the data that the algorithms are trained on.
So how would business leaders go about reducing these silos and being more inclusive and providing better training and knowledge in this area?
Yeah, so I think this is where we need strategies both in the workforce today and looking at how we make this field more attractive for women and other minorities at an earlier age. So making data and AI cool. I think I've seen approaches from Data Science for All is a great nonprofit that tries to focus at the elementary school age. And then at ThoughtSpot, we partner with the Mark Cuban Foundation, the AI boot camps that appeal to high schoolers. We also partner with WILDA, Women Leaders in Data and AI, because even though I referenced a 26% gender diversity in this field, the higher up you go at the VP level, it becomes even less. So addressing leadership there, WILDA is another organization. And then it becomes looking at our workforce practices. I know you had an earlier guest on your podcast talking about the impact of hybrid work actually is penalizing some women as they move up the ranks. But looking at workforce practices to create a more inclusive environment, ensuring upskilling. So I really applaud organizations that are proactively reskilling, upskilling around generative AI and being intentional about who is able to benefit from these workshops.
To Amanda's earlier point, can I go back into the data and essentially substitute tokens for where I see gender or anything that would be indicative of something that would lend itself to bias, so that I am just getting a purer set of data because I'm thinking through what it is I'm actually trying to pull out of the metadata?
You could, Mike, but I don't think that goes far enough. And if we look at generative AI, those tokens, it's harder to figure that out. So let's take two specifics. If I think back earlier in my career, I started my work in data and analytics in Switzerland in the late 1980s. Now, back then, and it might even be true today, as a married woman, I was not allowed to have my own bank account, even though I was the primary earner at that point in time. So if you go back and train a model on a woman's credit, there's a point in time in history in certain countries that women could not have their own credit. Now let's also overlay, if a woman takes a time off, maternity leave, what does that do to their credit if they take a leave of absence? And so how do we compensate for those gaps in employment or in history when women couldn't have credit? So there, you can't just take a token for gender. You're seeing patterns that might be different, that might be punitive to women and less for a male colleague. Does that make sense, Mike?
Yeah, totally. I get that.
Now let's take generative AI. So generative AI, and some researchers used a term that I think we need to pay attention to, and this is covert bias. I like the word covert because we're not even noticing it, and it's subtle. And I'll use a phrase that somebody recently used. We were talking about a crime that happened, and a Black person used the term, "Oh, he be bad, he be bad." A white person might say, "He is bad," or "He is good." Just the linguistics there, researchers at Stanford University and the Allen Institute then had the generative AI model say, how would you score this for intellect and stupidity and fairness? And intellect, the he be bad, was scored low, and stupidity was scored high, just based on the phrasing. And let me tell you, this person I was speaking to, he's actually brilliant. It's just the way he speaks. And so this covert bias, we have a lot. And then we could say, so I used ethnicity for women. We could talk about, is she confident or is she aggressive? So there's a lot of language regarding gender that I think generative AI, it's much more subtle or covert, and there's no simple way just to substitute a token there. We have to be intentional about noticing these differences in the training data, and then it's people applying their own logic to these algorithms.
Yeah, I think this takes a whole lot of the human element factor, and the technology isn't going to be able to just do that on its own.
Right. And that's why one of the things that we believe at ThoughtSpot, you always have to have human in the loop with anything that is AI generated. And so that applies across all use cases. You never just want AI on its own. We have to recognize that AI helps, I think, free human creativity, do more with less, but you need to take these safeguards. You're not just going to use AI without that human in the loop.
Do we need better AI/data literacy? Because a lot of the questions that you were raising were things you probably shouldn't be asking in the first place, because the machine's really not designed to give the right level of insight anyway. So, do we need to get smarter so that we can work with the machines that are getting smarter?
We absolutely do, Mike. And that is something that I wrote about in our annual trends report, that we need to move from data literacy to really AI literacy. And data literacy includes everything from understanding where data originates, but also differences in definitions. So I'm a sports fan. If I watch American football, my son is an offensive lineman. We talk about, was he offside? If I watch soccer with some of my European friends, offside there has a very different definition. And so data literacy starts with a common language of the business. AI literacy is now really, what is that AI model telling me? When might it hallucinate? And what even does a hallucination mean? And how accurate is it? So even if we think about a life skill, interpreting weather events, the degree that we might have a snowstorm or a hurricane, that's really AI literacy.
So this is a lot to consider and to think about moving forward. If there was one key takeaway you could leave with our audience today, what would that be?
That all data is biased, and we have a responsibility to recognize that and proactively take mitigation strategies. Don't leave it just up to people building these models. Companies deploying AI also have a responsibility.
Let me ask you another question, though. It seems to me that somewhere along the line, all of this seems to break down somewhere in seventh grade. And in seventh grade, what seems to happen is, women or whoever is interested in math roughly equally, and then they start to fall off in numbers. And a lot of that seems to be built into the education system, and the people who teach the math tend to be also people who look like me, and then they emphasize these different things, and they don't necessarily have the right level of engagement. So is all this stuff around AI coming home to roost because of stuff that we haven't addressed since seventh grade, and that's been going on for decades.
Yeah, I think you have a valid point, Mike. And we do know middle school is a time where people are going to gravitate to where they have a sense of belonging, trying to fit in, and what they feel not just good at, but excellent at. So girls aim for excellence, whereas boys are like, well, I'm good enough at that. I'll try that. And so there's differences there. But I had the privilege of recently doing an event with one of our customers, Mattel, and they shared a fantastic video aimed at an earlier age. They looked like first or second graders, so say 6 or 7 years old. And when they showed a video of race car drivers, the girls are saying, I don't want to do that. That's something for boys. Then they showed a video of a female race car driver, and they're like, I want to do that. That's cool. So I think we need to be more intentional about the subtle messages that we give girls at an earlier age about AI is a cool, and data is a cool industry, a cool job. And data is part of everyone's job. If I want to be a fashion designer, data is powering the designs data is powering the decisions that are made about fashion. So it's not just something for boys.
It'd be great if there was some kind of program in the schools at an earlier age. I know in high school, they start talking about careers and career testing and give a little bit more information. But if there was more of that in the middle school years, a class that just kind of goes over careers, that would be really neat.
Absolutely. And until that happens, Amanda, I think we have to rely on groups like Girls Who Code and even the Girl Scouts. They give out STEM badges when girls participate in some of these workshops related to learning data and AI.
All right. Well, I hope that I'm good enough to have this conversation with you guys. It's, I'm hardly striving for excellence here, but that's just the nature of the beast, I think.
I think you have more confidence, Mike. And you know what? The reality is, I fear that sometimes when we talk about women in STEM and women in tech, it becomes a divisive conversation. And really what we're looking at is that men often have more power, whether it's subtly or formally. There are more male CEOs, more male CIOs. And so this is where I say our male allies have to be part of the discussion, because I think many are well-meaning, and it's really just recognizing that we do have some challenges, but we want your help with this rather than just saying, oh, well, it's a tough nut to crack.
Well, I haven't run this through a data science program, but I'm willing to confidently say that there are more men that I know who qualify as idiots than women. So therefore.
Oh, no. I don't believe that at all. My son would say, he just fakes it till he makes it. Whereas I think we're like, oh, we have to tick all the boxes. And it's just a different way we approach things.
Absolutely. Well, this has been a wonderful conversation. I'm so glad you were able to come on our show today. And Mike, do you have any final thoughts?
No, this has been great. I think that I think you nailed it. There's two wings to this thing. One is societal, and we got to get at that. And that's a long haul fix. And then there's a bunch of short term fixes in the data and the models and the way we create them and put those together that we can make up for a lot of the errors in the past, as they say. But when it comes to AI, it's the one place you can't fake it till you make it.
So Cindy, any final thoughts on your end?
No, thank you for shedding a light on this important topic. And I think as we continue to address these things, I'm optimistic that AI will actually improve humanity and will not lead to bias at scale.
All right, folks. Well, thanks for listening to the latest episode of the TechStrong.ai podcast series. We hope you enjoyed it. You can find this and other episodes on our site. Until then, we'll see you next time.